and final presentation will actually follow very nicely from that discussion. I'm going to welcome back David Fine, who will be speaking on behalf of Sarah Goldenkrantz, who could not be here today. And he will share with us their work on a closer look at barriers and opportunities to improve chlamydia retesting rates.
Sarah sends hellos. She had to leave unexpectedly yesterday, but for those who know her, she and family are fine. And it's your loss. She sent me detailed notes, which I have for each slide, which I have memorized this morning. We're going to cover some of the same territory that Kelly just very nicely presented on. I think it will be interesting because between the two efforts, there are different strengths and limitations, as well as some common threads that I think will also tie into some of the questions that arose. As Kelly had said, prior chlamydia infection increases the risk of reinfection and complications. Most post-treatment infections result from reinfection, while keeping in mind the Patty's first set of slides, and about 14% of females reinfected post-treatment, a median value across about 38 studies that Sarah looked at. The treatment guidelines. Test of cure is not advised, and retest approximately 3 months after treatment or whenever persons next present for medical care within the 12 months following initial treatment. I'm somewhat challenged calculating what 3 months means, and I think actually that came up a little bit with Kelly as well in terms of range of days. Some background studies, Joan Chow, had found about 24% retesting rate in a Medicaid waiver family planning program, much higher in managed care. Kelly has not only spoken about it now with her new work, but in 2010 had about a 3 in 10 likelihood of being retested. And Sarah, 2 years ago, had found about 28 to 34% retesting. Our rationale here was to really, it's the second bullet more than anything else. We wanted to look at return rates, but we also wanted to look at factors at the client, provider, or system level that contribute to low retesting rates. Just to reprise the issue, someone comes in with has a positive chlamydia result, they are treated, they are asked to return, they do return, they get retested. Pretty straightforward. So why are retest rates so low? Is it client return rates are poor, or are providers missing opportunities to retest? And what factors in our limited data systems predict return and retesting? The data for this analysis came from, again, the federal Title X program funded by the Office of Population Affairs. Out in Region 10, that's Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska, there are about 150 federally funded family planning clinics. They all use, within the region, a common clinic client visit record, which collects demographic and service throughput or output data from all patient visits. The client identifier is unique to the clinic, but again, as Kelly has mentioned, the challenge of looking at truly unique identifiers either across systems or across states within systems or across clinics is a big limitation. We have CBRs that were analyzed from calendar year 2009. This study actually connects to IPP but doesn't touch IPP data at all. Sarah wanted to look at the breadth of women who came in for family planning services of any kind and determined who was in for treatment literally based on the data in that system. There is a measure for chlamydia treatment, and here it is. This is the old paper form that the family planning program had used for many years before the world went electronic. And on the right-hand side, halfway down, there is a box, STD-related services, one of which is chlamydia treatment. And I would guess 90% of the records in the clinics in Region 10 now use electronic medical records or systems and export files for analysis, but there still are a few that actually mark this form. The methods included computing client return rate, the percentage of clients that returned within 90 to 360 days, or by our definition, 3 to 12 months, post-treatment. And we computed a missed opportunity rate, the percentage of clients that returned but were not retested. And then we explored predictors of return and retesting around age, race, clinician type. The sample, in 2009, there were 3,329 women from ages 10 to 80 who had documented chlamydia treatment. Not surprisingly, over half of them were 15 to 24 years of age, and about 11% 30 or older. And for those who are interested, she identified the initial treatment date for that visit record and then aggregated to the patient level and included data about subsequent visits. In terms of race ethnicity, Region 10 is predominantly white, but not surprisingly, for those women who had been identified as getting chlamydia treatment, it was a somewhat more diverse sample. Only about 62% were white, compared to 75 to 80% white of all family planning patients in Region 10. Of the 139,000 plus total female clients in 2009, we had 3,329 documented chlamydia treatment cases. Of those, 41% did not return at all from that day forward for at least a year. Okay? Of those clients, 59% that returned within 12 months, significant minority, about 21%, returned in under 3 months. So essentially, based on the criteria and the treatment guidelines, 39% of all of those women treated were eligible for retesting. Among those eligible returning clients, 52% were retested at their first subsequent return visit. 10% were retested at a later visit but within the time frame. And 38% of those who came in within the time frame one or more times were not tested at all. Low client return rates, according to Sarah, plus many missed opportunities equals few women retested. Of the 3,000 plus females with documented chlamydia treatment in this administrative system, fully 76% were not retested overall. Factors associated with return and retesting. Sarah highlights Kelly's work from 2010 as well as her own, which identified retesting rates were highest among adolescents, women aged 15 to 19, and also was associated with state and race out in Region 10. Measures associated with getting back to the clinic in the window of three months to 12 months. Young age was significantly related to coming back. In addition, Asian women were more likely to return to the clinic. In terms of retest associations, mid-level women who came back and saw a mid-level provider, and in family planning, there are really four types of providers. There are doctors, mid-level providers, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, RNs, LPNs, and counselors. A majority of the patients are seen by mid-level providers and are the ones who are most likely to provide clinical care. Age was a significant factor in terms of retesting, as was mid-level provider, and being of Asian race was also significant in terms of being retested. You're more likely to return if young age or Asian race. You're more likely to be retested if young, Asian, or seen by a mid-level provider. I want to jump to the implications around shared responsibility that Kelly brought up, and I think others who brought up questions are interested in. Provider and client behavior contribute to low retesting rates. Systems innovations as well as provider training can improve return rates and reduce missed opportunities. Examples of systems innovations, Kelly mentioned one, Clinic Champion. We have others that are also fairly obvious, EHR, EMR prompts, even more simpler appointment reminder options, involve frontline staff more when young women come in who are coming back after they have already been treated, easing scheduling and flow, particularly around self-obtained specimens. And besides Clinic Champion, the question about retesting 1 to 3 months in the second or third month after treatment, rather than holding hard and fast to 90 to 365 days. Why are some clients more likely to return? Young women seem to come in, at least to these Title X clinics, more frequently. They're more likely to return. It may not necessarily be for retesting services. Why do mid-level providers retest more? It could be because of there is movement in Region 10 to self-collected specimens, but there is still, if you will, a bit of a drag around cervical specimens out in Region 10, although vaginal swabs have really picked up the pace. The other issue, by the way, around mid-level providers is they are the ones providing the bulk of clinical services. So it may be more about reason for visit than provider. Kelly mentioned Holly Howard's work with about a 34% retesting rate. Park et al. Looked qualitatively at these issues and got some provider feedback where there is an issue around getting them to believe that retesting is doable, above and beyond the ability to at least figure out ways to get them back into the clinic, although everyone has pretty much agreed that retesting improves health. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have about 5 minutes left, so I'd like to open it for questions for David on this presentation.
What, Chris?
Okay. I'm wondering if there was any thought of looking about to correlate method use, method type with their return, and if there was an opportunity there for somebody coming back for resupply, for example, would that an opportunity then seized upon and considered retested?
Excellent point. The system includes contraceptive method that the client was on before she came in for a visit, as well as what she left on. So I think, Chris, you're asking, can we look at the array of methods that she was on and whether or not, in fact, that's related to her having to come back? Is that correct?
Yes.
We can do that. Thank you.
So I'd like to ask a question that actually I think ties a lot of this together, and perhaps some of the other speakers could comment as well. I think everybody's done a really nice job of documenting the challenges and the progress in increasing retesting rates. And I really like what Sarah had about the shared responsibility, providers and patients, and I think that's very true. So my question is around barriers to retesting and the role that motivational counseling might play. And really, you know, one of the barriers, I mean, things like reminders and are good, and the possibility of the self-collected swabs for convenience is good, but if people don't feel like they need to be retested because they feel fine, is there any work around motivational counseling? Is it part of the post-test counseling at the time of the initial diagnosis and treatment? And how do we really convince people of the importance and the need for retesting? Because my feeling is that that's a barrier. People just don't think they need to be retested. So I don't know if you could comment on that, or
well,
anybody else.
I would briefly say, and then open it up to Kelly and clinicians out there. You know, it's ironic that in the screening we do, 75, 80, 85% of the women who test positive are asymptomatic. Mm-hmm. So they've come in for some other services and, in fact, test positive. But somehow or other, that recollection doesn't carry over 3-4 months out when they come back again and feel fine. And it, your point about motivational interviewing and incorporating something there seems right on target. But I'm interested
please.
In others.
Thank you.
I think something to consider, particularly for STD clinics, is that very high rates of presumptive treatment may be creating some missed opportunities for this. There is no post-test counseling, really. It's just whatever happens at the time you get the test. Some people are being screened as a bundle of services. They may not be spending that much time talking to their provider about why they're at risk. They're hopefully getting treated, but I think that at least in this student health center, we figured out that follow-up interaction with the provider to really explain why you need to take your medicine, why you need to have your partners treated, and why you need to get retested. We're all very important to increasing retesting rates.
I totally agree with that. I think that in this, that your talk just illustrated how complex it is, and I think there's no one magic bullet. That A, I think, yes, you can motivate them, but if they go there and then the providers won't test them, you have to have structural interventions where you incentivize providers to do this, I think. And also, all these talks have made me realize that why are we waiting until 4 months to rescreen people? We're finding that really most of it is early repeat infection, either from an original partner or a new partner or treatment failure, and we're letting them wait for another 3 months. I think we should maybe reconsider testing them much earlier. That we found that in our study that 1 month was the sweet spot. If you didn't get them by 1 month, you weren't going to get them. So I think that there's motivation at the part of the patient, structural incentives, and then and then maybe some adaptation.
Okay, very provocative. Thank you. Were you going to say something?
The other thing, besides, you know, EMR flags within a clinic, many of these family planning agencies have many clinics. And to the extent that the EMRs are becoming more sophisticated and the agency can track the client and her or his mobility, which is a large issue we know from other work we've done, we will stop maybe missing some of those that show up a mile away at another health department family planning site.
Mm-hmm. Hi. I'm Trish Davlin. I'm from the Monroe County Health Department STD Clinic out of Rochester, New York. And really what I see as a provider in this setting is that when they are symptomatic, what they're coming to us about is they have BV. They have bacterial vaginosis. They're symptomatic. They need to get the flagyl. They can't get to the provider without a three-month wait. So we're doing the standardized testing for them. We're finding them to have chlamydia. We recommend that they return to us for rescreening in a 90-day time frame. Sometimes the barrier is they return and it's not enough time for that NAT test to clear them to know whether it's a true reinfection or is it an unclearing. Also, funding seems to always be an issue in terms of retesting, like we all experience, I'm sure. But why they return to us a lot of times is not because we recommend that they rescreen for the chlamydia, but they have bacterial vaginosis again and that they want to be retreated. So, or their partner is now testing for chlamydia 2 months out and they're coming in for retreatment. So I don't know really in terms of all this, like what is the best answer always in terms of the rescreening. I understand the importance of the rescreening, but not, you know, it's hard as an STD clinic when you're in a walk-in clinic setting and we need to put valves in place for, you know, probably documenting when they're returning for rescreening. But, you know, in terms of what would be the testing that would be used in the interim, and because a lot of times they are coming back, but they will not, they want a test of cure. That is really where some of our patients come in, where they want a test of cure.
Thank you. So I hate to end the conversation because it's been very stimulating, so we'll make time for two more quick questions or comments. So thank you.
Candy Hatzlaw, the Minnesota Department of Health. We've been looking at rescreening rates and trying to figure out what to do, and one of the things, thinking that how could we utilize a whole bunch of different mechanisms to get more rescreening happening, and one of the things that we had thought of, and I tried to go through the all of the IPP coordinators to see if there was anything, and it appears there isn't anything in the country, but has anybody thought about doing a campaign where there are posters posted in all over the clinic around getting rescreened, and things that go into the provider's offices that hang over, like we've had small copies of the testing treating guidelines. And I just wondered about something like that, and I also wondered about, has anybody been doing anything around texting reminders to people? Because I haven't heard too much about that, and if it's out there, I just was wondering.
Are you going to say something, Pat? Do you want to respond to that, Patty? Oh, briefly.
There was a session by Leandro Mena and some others, I was included, where they looked at text messaging to bring people back in, and it was very, yeah, it's helpful. Not overwhelmingly helpful, but it helps some.
Right.
And they change phones all the time. They have no phone. They change their number. So that's about 1 month.
Yeah, Linda Cregan from California again, and I have more or less responses to things that we've said. One, in Region 9, the IPP has decided to use the 1 to 12-month range for measuring our retesting rates. Secondly, to say that I agree that counseling is key, and it's another one that's on us. If patients don't understand that it's important to return, more or less I think that's on the clinician, so to speak. Myself, because I think what you brought up is very important, David, that many patients move. It's probably a third of patients from other kinds of evaluations move to say, not only come back to my clinic, you're a patient of ours, we're happy to see you back, but if you're not here, go somewhere in 3 months and to impress that it's important. Mm-hmm. So we won't know that she gets in, but for her health care, I like to say that in addition to come back. There is a toolkit that Region 9 has that includes things like posters that someone was just asking about, and then Holly Howard also has a texting for retesting project.
Thank you very much. So I want to thank again all of the speakers, and I'd like to thank the audience for really, really thought-provoking discussion, and one that I'm sure will continue. So thank you all.